Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:30 Irish Summer Time. Today is April 25th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Now, before we get started on any of those, let's have just a quick review of the week. Well, this has been a week in which oil hit new highs for a number of days, but has encountered some resistance around $120 and has paused there for the last 3 days. It has been really rather a consistent move over the last 6 months or so it would really need to take a reaction of about $13 to impugn the integrity of the overall uptrend, and it doesn't look like it's going to do that right now. This has also been a week in which stock markets in the West continue to find support and have been pressuring the upper sides of their ranges. We had the Nasdaq breaking upwards, that's the Nasdaq 100 breaking upwards and establishing itself above its February highs, and the Dow Jones and S&P have been relatively steady around their highs as well. So that's also quite positive news. Probably more groundbreaking has been the massive upward dynamics we've seen in the China A share market. That's the Shanghai A share markets. The move that we've seen there has been very much related to the change of policy at government level, where they have lowered the stamp duty level right back to where it was before they started tightening the stock market back in the summer of last year. And that resulted in the largest move on the A shares to the upside in quite a long time, a number of years, which certainly shows that the market is finding support. This is quite likely to be the bottom of this reaction, as the market has m moved towards a 50% decline, which probably hit headlines and rang bells with a number of people at government level. Looking at the government bond markets, well, Japanese government bonds had a very weak day in here today. Yields rose a little bit. They are looking a little bit overextended in the very short term, but with inflation rearing its head in Japan, which has been looked for a number of years, of course, this inflation is not coming from consumer demand. It is coming from higher food and energy prices, which is not welcome. So there are bullish and bearish cases there. But the stock markets show that the indices are finding support, and we have the foundations of short-term uptrends there right now. They are approaching the Nikkei and the TOPIX are approaching the top of their medium-term ranges, and they need to sustain moves above the top of those ranges to really say that demand is returning to the market in force. But it's looking quite positive in the short term. Japanese government bonds aren't the only bonds that have been weak. And we have also seen weakness right across the board in the US, the UK, Europe, and Australia, where government bonds hit a peak back in January and have come nowhere close to reaching that accelerated peak or that climactic or that buying climax. And this continues to look like extended top development for the government bond sector. Of course, following the credit crisis, an awful lot of people had run towards the bond markets, particularly long-dated treasuries and inflation-adjusted bonds, because they were very conscious of the fact that banks were in trouble, liquidity was drying up, and they wanted to be able to protect principal, and it was very much a safe haven. But during the course of this week, we've seen there has been a bit of all change. The dollar has rallied quite a bit, and the euro has backed away from $1.60. It's at 1.56 at the moment. And we're starting to see the equity markets looking a little bit firmer. Precious metals have been a little bit weaker, and we are starting to see money starting to flow back towards equity markets, not just in the US, but right across the boards. And there are a number of European markets which are looking a little bit basey in here. The leader among those at the moment is the OMX in Sweden, which was up in excess of 3% today on Ericsson's rather good results. But what we are starting to see is a perception that we are coming towards the end of the credit crisis. The problems that are outstanding are known problems, and yes, there is the potential for further write-downs to occur, particularly in some of those leading bank shares. But those are known problems, and the expectations of greater surprises are, and surprises that would affect the wider economy, I think are pretty low. Given the amount of liquidity that's been thrown at this problem, lower interest rates and policy decisions made by the White House, there is a lot to be, well, there have been a lot of solutions thrown at this particular problem, and they may be starting to take effect as we see from action in the stock markets. Given the fact that the confidence levels is rising once more in stock markets, that is really quite good news for those leading markets. There are a number of candidates for a long convalescence. For example, markets and any market that is heavily weighted to the financial sector, such as Ireland or Switzerland, will probably take quite a long time to recover. The same can probably be said for Japan. Japan has also been heavily weighed on by selling pressure. It is certainly finding support in here at the moment, but given the extent of the decline and how slow it has been to find support, the chances are that this is going to take some time. Inflation, which I remember reading about articles about inflation back in 2004 and 2005 in Japan and saying that that was going to be the thing that was going to fix all of Japan's ills if inflation came back and interest rates were normalized, because it would stop Japanese investors moving their savings abroad. But of course, government bond yields there are 1.6%, so they're still remarkably low, even with the rather dramatic move that we saw on the JGBs today. So it will take more of a significant move in that direction to start pulling Japanese money back into Japan, but it may start to trickle back. And foreign investors will probably be leading the way there if the stock market does start to perform. But at the moment, it is looking like it will just take some time to build support and break the medium-term downtrend conclusively, and that it can do that just by going sideways. But as confidence starts to return to stock markets, well, valuations are reasonably low in here, and when you look at how low the valuations for European markets have gone, there is the potential for bargain hunting in a number of markets out there right now. Now, of course, we can expect earnings write-downs, particularly in shares that are related to the consumer economy, where, of course, that would help to push up PEs. But in the main, stocks are considerably cheaper now than they were a year ago, and there will certainly be people starting to look at that point. But of course, markets that have led on the upside are resources markets, and resources are very much in the headlines in here right now. You have precious metals that made new highs recently and had remarkably good runs. Now, we are long-term believers in the commodity super cycle, and our buy line has been supply inelasticity meets rising demand for in excess of 5 years, almost 6 years. And that is unlikely to change. There is simply just not enough of basic commodities to fuel demand throughout the world. We have 6 billion people in the world today. That is considerably more than there were back in the last commodities boom, and so many more of them are involved in this commodities boom. Globalization has been successful in raising billions of people out of subsistence living, and the first thing you do when you can afford it is you improve your diet. And that is what millions and millions of people are doing right across the emerging world, particularly in China and India. That is helping to propel the demand for foods upwards, and supply has been slow to meet it. We've had record crops on a number of years in the last 10 years, but international stockpiles are at record lows. This is not just because of the drive to biofuels and ethanol. although that is certainly contributory. The demand from the new middle classes of emerging or progressing Asia is helping to fuel this demand. And it's not just demand in foods, but in industrial metals and in all commodities. The per capita use of oil in the emerging world is considerably below that of the developed world, and that is a disparity that will normalize over time. That is also something that is going to drive the bull market in just about every commodity. The per capita consumption of basic commodities will normalize over time as these economies eventually emerge. That is why we started to refer to these economies more as progressing economies rather than emerging economies, because emerging doesn't really fit with how well these economies have progressed in the last decade and are likely to progress in the coming decades. Of course, Asia is the GDP capital of the world at present in terms of growth. And that certainly can't, the same can't be said for the US, Europe, or the Anglophone world. The BRIC economies of the world, Russia, Brazil, India, and China, are leading the world in terms of growth, particularly India and China. And that is a trend which is unlikely to reverse anytime soon. Capital markets in those economies are growing considerably, as well as the sophistication of those markets. And they have provided outsized returns over the last 5 years and are likely to continue to do so for quite a long time to come. I remember talking with at the Money Show back in June with one of our subscribers from Hong Kong, who told me that her father had died something like 50 to 60 years ago and left in his will a couple of hundred shares in a Chinese, sorry, in a Hong Kong-based property developer. And since then, because of bonus shares and rights issues and various other bonuses that have occurred, those couple of hundred shares have morphed into 250,000 shares, and the price has gone from about $10 to $45, which goes to show that shares in markets which are set to expand over the long term, regardless of the sector that they may be in, are likely to benefit really quite considerably from the move. And the same is likely to be true of shares today in China and India held for the very long term. I have little doubt that investors today who are astonished at the performance of Warren Buffett and his ilk will be just as surprised when when his Chinese or Indian counterparts start to emerge in the next 20 or 30 years, people who have done fantastically well by buying cheap companies and holding on to them for the very long term and valuing management. India has done remarkably well by providing itself with entrepreneurs and is remarkably well resourced in the boardroom. That is certainly an area which is difficult to foster. You can build infrastructure and you can make it easy for foreign investors to buy land and build factories, but fostering an air of entrepreneurship and allowing human beings to do their very best is not an easy thing to do, and is somewhere that India has successfully excelled. The Indian market has pulled back really rather significantly in the last 3 or 4 months, in line with quite a lot of other progressing markets. In fact, India has had a 30% decline almost every year in the last 4 years, and this is no exception. There is certainly potential for India to range sideways for a considerable amount of time on this occasion as confidence returns to markets generally, and that could take another few months and upwards of a year. But it doesn't impact the long-term potential of markets like India or China in any iota whatsoever, because they are not in any way related to the subprime issue. that has a Made in Wall Street logo on it, and it will primarily be the US economy which suffers, and potentially the European economy, but certainly not to the same extent. Progressing markets or emerging markets are suffering much more from a liquidity crisis. Liquidity has dried up, it's been much more difficult for funds to borrow money and invest it abroad. When that liquidity crisis eventually frees up, and there is evidence that it is beginning to, then we will see the flows of capital moving back towards Asia. And they could indeed be quite a bit stronger than they have been for the very simple fact that GDP growth in the US and Europe is probably going to slow down, whereas it won't slow down by nearly as much in those progressing countries, which heightens the argument for being there even more. The resources economies have led the stock markets on the upside over the last 3 or 4 months. They may lose some of the attention that they have gained in those 3 or 4 months as interest returns to stock markets generally. But they have led the move on the upside. They are threatening to push upwards to new high ground, and there's no evidence that they will not be able to lead on the upside, although probably not at the same pace that they have done over the last 2 or 3 months. And this is something that is quite important. Even though we have got precious metals pulling back somewhat, and although grains continue to make the front page headlines, they are no longer making new highs, with probably the exception of rice, although that has pulled back in the last few days. But not to any great extent, I should add. But this is a secular bull market, and earnings for companies involved in this sector are likely to be outsized for a considerable period of time. Looking at companies to invest in, probably the ones that will perform best over the very long term are those with pricing power right now. Companies like Vodafone, although they have a fantastic business and they have big margins, don't have pricing power. Whereas you look at the potash miners or the iron ore miners, and they continue to be able to push out their margins and push out the amount of money that they can charge their customers considerably year after year. And there's little sign of that ending, because it is comparatively easy to set up a mobile phone company, for example, but you can't just create iron ore. You have to have a mine, and there is a limited supply and expanding demand. Supply and elasticity meets rising demand. The current liquidity crisis and crisis of confidence in the credit markets has led to a massive infusion of liquidity. Over the long term, that is inflationary. We are certainly starting to see inflation hitting the headlines presently. That is primarily because of high oil prices and high grain prices. But we are also starting to see it moving in terms of wage demands, and we saw that in Germany this week, where a number of unions have agreed considerable pay hikes for their workers with the government. And we're seeing it in a number of other countries as well. This is important because we are now in a new inflationary cycle. When you look at those long charts of the government bond yields, particularly that US 10-year treasury, well, they bottomed in 2003, and while we've recently tested that bottom, and this credit crisis has probably extended the cycle, they're base building at the moment. We're going through periods where inflation is a problem and becomes less of a problem, and rates are moving in line with those issues. And inflation is not going to be a problem all of the time. But as time goes by, rates will probably go up that little bit more when inflation is a problem, and come down a little bit less when it is less of a problem, and we'll get the foundations of a new uptrend. It's likely to be volatile, but over the long term, that is a bonus for commodities. And stock markets, when interest rates come down and fear passes, they should do really quite well, and those progressing economies will do even better. There is also the fact that there is no country out there, because of the competitive nature of globalization and so many companies consolidating their earnings in their home currency from foreign operations, that no country wants a strong currency. But some countries are more eager to have a weak currency than others. That's true of the dollar right now. Now, the dollar has rallied in the last couple of days, but not to the extent that it is putting in anything other than a short-term low at the moment. I don't want to be too bearish of the dollar in the short term because it has become a little bit overextended. It has become a political issue in Europe particularly, but also because we're starting to see money flowing back towards the equity markets and back into dollar-denominated assets, and that is helping to strengthen the dollar. But over the long term, when you continue to print vast quantities of any currency, it is going to lose its value over time. And that is why markets such as the gold market remain in secular bull markets, because they are physical assets that have an intrinsic value and are valued by investors. The amount of liquidity that is being pumped into the system at present is beyond belief, and it's certainly not a new thing, and it's been going on a number of occasions over the last 20 years. But it is also something that is sowing the seeds for future inflationary cycles and is putting off a longer-term inflationary problem. But at the same time, the Austrian school answer and letting everything collapse and we will be rebuild from the ashes is certainly not going to work either, and it is going to be a very tight balancing act over the long term for central bankers to manage the new inflationary cycle. There's very little they can do about high oil prices and high grain prices, although certainly policy changes both within the EU and the US could certainly help to boost food production, and they could get rid of this nonsensical set-aside policy that has crippled production over the last 3 or 4 years from the end of the Common Agricultural Policy in Europe. But that is something that is going to resolve itself over time. Longer term, Asian currencies are starting to appreciate considerably, because they have been so undervalued following the Asian financial crisis. The greatest mover there has been in Singapore, and Singapore is actually now at a stronger point than it has been in any time over the last 15 years. That also links through to Singapore's ambition of being the Switzerland of Asia, and they're certainly attracting quite a lot of capital, particularly from China in terms of private banking. But generally, we see the Chinese yuan appreciating, and you look at the long-term chart of the rupee and a number of other Asian currencies, they're all appreciating and have plenty of room to appreciate further against the US dollar. This is an important move because while no country wants a particularly strong currency, the Asian currencies are considerably undervalued, inflation is becoming a problem, and the solution has been, particularly in the case of India and increasingly in the case of China, to allow their currencies to appreciate. This is a move that could take 10 years, but it certainly also helps to boost the performance or the return from Asian-denominated assets, and that is a bonus for long-term investors in that region. And with that thought, I will leave you for the evening, but thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a great weekend.